we always talk about like kind of turning everyone into a researcher or making researchers rock stars in the same sense that like Instagram made visual creators rock stars, mediums made journalists rock stars. We think DSI can make scientists rock stars.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the DSI podcast. Today we're joined by Andrew Verbinen and Andrew Baxt from HairDAO. HairDAO is a patient-owned, mission-driven corporation united by the goal of making hair loss a problem of the past. Their goal is to fund the assets that they believe will accelerate the cure for hair loss as soon as possible. These assets range from intellectual property to hair loss companies and state-of-the-art treatment clinics. HairDAO's community includes researchers, engineers, content creators, and investors, all of whom contribute their own expertise towards solving hair loss. Today, we spoke about the state of research and funding in the hair loss space, the big problem they're tackling, their first funded projects, and what they've learned from building in DSI. Hope you enjoy. I always like to start by hearing a bit about your background and how you ended up here. So to start with you, Andrew Verbinen, that is, walk us through that. You have a background in value investing and analysis in crypto and real estate, and now you're working as co-founder and core contributor at HairDAO. Tell me a little bit about that path to getting there, and of course, you know, what drove that interest in getting involved in hair loss research and funding.
So I graduated Hamilton College in 2018. I worked in real estate finance for a little bit, real estate private equity. It was, you know, interesting, but not interesting enough to keep me there for a while. And so I gradually transitioned to equity and crypto investing. And so I really got involved in crypto as an investor, simultaneously or in parallel. I think I've been losing my hair since I was 20 years old. And so I was kind of like woefully or acutely aware of, just how bad the current solution set for hair loss is. And as I learned more and more about crypto, I really didn't think the two were ever going to lap at all. That is until I saw VitaDAO, which was the first BioDAO created, and saw that how they sort of used the crypto like design mechanisms to try to realign incentives within longevity. And so I think, you know, Bax and I have known each other actually since high school. We've shared the pain of hair loss together for some time and talked about it. And so as we spoke, it seemed pretty clear that hair loss could be a DAO and correct many of sort of the market misalignment in hair, like VitaDAO did for longevity.
Got it. And then Andrew B, moving on to you now, you're also, you know, also a core founder and core contributor to the project. Sounds like you've got, I guess, sort of a similar background in the financial world and an academic background in, I think, product design. So yeah, man, tell me about your path to getting HairDAO started and what drove that interest initially for you.
Yeah. So I've been struggling with hair loss for at least a few years. Like Andrew said, I've kind of always had thin hair. Andrew can attest, I was called patches back in high school. So that was kind of all going on. And then separately, I got into crypto in 2017 as a junior in college, like you said, studying product design. And kind of from there, just got deeper and deeper into it. First as an investor, but then also as a builder. Had messed around in different ecosystems in the space. And then I think the coolest, or at least like the big moment for me was, like Andrew said, seeing VitaDAO in the summer of 2021. I thought it was the coolest app I'd seen in crypto since I'd gotten into the space. Over the next few months, put two and two together with Heron and VitaDAO.
Got it. So as a bit of like a primer for the rest of the conversation now, I'd be interested in hearing what HairDAO is about, or maybe just how you tend to break it down to people who are just learning about it for the first time. And I mean, in addition to that, like why it's so important to you guys personally.
Yeah. So I think it most importantly to start out with why HairDAO. I think the main reason for why HairDAO is that effectively, because the NIH has classified hair loss as a cosmetic condition, there's almost no funding for early stage R&D. There's about $5 million annually spent on hair loss early stage research. And so when it comes down to it, the reason we have such poor solutions, we only have minoxidil and finasteride. Finasteride discovered on accident while looking for enlarged prostates. Minoxidil, discovered when looking for a cure to hypertension or high blood pressure. And, it all boils down to funding. And so when we look at it, our primary objective is effectively to be a hyper-efficient factory for intellectual property generation in the hair loss space. And for several reasons, we think there's a ton of middlemen kind of between patients and researchers in sort of biotech and biomedical research that we can disrupt to ultimately do that and become that hyper-efficient sort of IP generation machine focused on hair loss.
Gotcha. And, to move into this space of hair loss research and to take, I guess, a similar approach in explaining this to someone otherwise uninformed, how do you tend to break down this broader state of hair loss research and solutions today?
Yeah, so I think the most telling example is the amount of funding going on through national governments, because those are by far, as you definitely know, the number one funders of early stage research across all medical conditions. So hair loss gets $5.4 million a year in global funding. So that's not just from the NIH, that's from the NIH of China, Europe, all over. And that's basically nothing. So for reference, the NIH's total budget is $45 billion plus a year. The downstream effect of that is that very few intelligent traditional researchers get into the space. Just because, people tend to follow the money. If, you can get paid a lot of money to go research cancer or Alzheimer's, you're going to go do that. I know we'll talk about this later, but that gives some interesting downstream effects in the hair loss market itself. But that's really, I think, where we start out from, that hair loss isn't recognized as a disease, receives no funding, and even the funding it gets, it comes from, so the NIH's hair division is part of the National Institute of Skin, Arthritis, and Musculoskeletal Disease. So there is no hair representation in the NIH department that it even gets its little funding from. So really just been completely dismissed, to be frank. Which, has, we think, created a decent opportunity for us.
So there's the whole kind of like research component, right? Where there's literally no money spent on research or very, very little money spent on research. And then there's this, on the flip side, there's this $7 billion market of current solutions or treatments that people are paying for. And so that's primarily split, roughly half and half, where half the market is going towards hair transplant practitioners who, for many reasons, right? They only have limited time, so they're less sort of likely to reinvest the profits of the hair transplant business back into providing better solutions for patients. Likewise, on the other side of the market, you're primarily dominated by your Hims, your Romans, those kind of companies, and they spend 120% of revenue on marketing and $0 on R&D. So despite kind of this like clear, patient demand for solutions, even bad solutions that currently exist on one side with no research on the other side. And we view sort of a big part of HairDAO's role, right, is making sure, that part of those revenues and those profits from the current industry are funneled back into early stage R&D that ends up benefiting patients who really are desperate for long-term, sort of solutions. I'll say then, just generally on hair loss research, I think there's a couple interesting sort of like structural things. The first is that the NIH really incentivizes mouse studies. Mouse hair and the way it grows really does not correlate with how human hair grows. And so hair researchers will have they'll make jokes like you could piss on a mouse and it'll grow hair. So that's the standard that we test everything on. So there's a lot of kind of like false positives, if you will. And as a result, the hair loss community, there's things called, right? They're like, I've had enough cope for a lifetime. Cause like there's every single month, there's someone saying, oh, we came out with a new solution. Look what it did on mice. The other thing that I think Ralph brought up on our first episode of our Hairy Matters podcast that I thought was really interesting was in terms of actually getting relevant data, there's a couple major barriers. The one of them is the availability of human scalp skin. It's just not that prevalent. Ralph used to get it because the way they did facelift surgeries, I guess, like they would cut out really big chunks of your scalp. Now they're sort of way more refined with the facelift, so there's less scalp skin for him to test on. And then the other sort of best-in-class model is the Makaki, which is a good sort of model for testing hair regrowth in humans. A lot of human rights activist groups and whatnot make that really difficult to come by. So there's a couple structural sort of things that are limiting the hair loss market as well right now.
Got you. You know, it seems like, you know, understanding that you guys have like a pretty narrow focus right now, it seems like hair loss as a whole is a much more multifaceted problem than it might appear to be. You know, so for example, things like alopecia, male or female pattern balding, even like chemotherapy-induced hair loss present like a pretty different problem, each of them to be tackled. Is that more or less correct, that line of thinking?
Yeah. So we're focused overwhelmingly on androgenic alopecia, which is male or female pattern baldness, which is about 95% of all hair loss cases. The other 5%, obviously still relevant, obviously can still learn a lot from those. But like, frankly, it's just not that much what our community cares about, just because, you know, 95% is a lot. That's the overwhelming majority. But within androgenetic alopecia, there's still so many different types of balders. It's actually pretty crazy. So like even me and Andrew are two different types of balders on what's called a diffuse thinner. Other people are like more like receding, like on the hairline. There are people that recede from the crown. There's stuff called diffuse unpatterned alopecia. There's patterned diffuse alopecia. So it still is very multifaceted. And a large part of that is that hair loss is a multi-gene problem. So there are at least double-digit genes implicated. Really, we don't know how many genes are actually implicated. But at least double digits. And that creates a lot of combinations for how people, even within androgenetic alopecia, can still lose their hair.
I'd be interested in hearing as well, like you mentioned, what most people in your community are interested in. I'd be curious to talk a little bit about the community underpinning this whole thing. There's sort of this apparent hair loss biohacker and like research community that's sort of been birthed from this lack of great solutions available for hair loss. I'm curious to hear from your perspective, how has the process of building HairDAO involved engaging those communities, and how much overlap versus like necessary conversion have you found between these circles and more, you know, crypto enthusiastic ones?
It's just created a really knowledgeable community. Like the people within our community, Ralph has told us like they know more than most dermatologists that he talks to and most hair loss researchers that he talks to. It's really kind of forced these people who are not biologists, you know, but they pretty much forced them to teach themselves biology and become self-taught biologists, which is really interesting for us, because I think a big part of DSI is we always talk about like kind of turning everyone into a researcher or making researchers rock stars, in the same sense that like Instagram made visual creators rock stars, mediums made journalists rock stars. We think DSI can make scientists rock stars. And what that will do, like you'll have the people through the traditional channels like Ralph, who are great scientists, but you also have people who, you know, come through the internet. And we think that hopefully our organization can be a place for those people, or where both groups rather can shine together.
And then I think just your question about overlap, like there's two sort of really, really strong, dedicated, passionate communities, that in hair loss and crypto. And I think, you know, it's funny because you could almost divide the company, the sort of community in two, where you have half the people coming in where it's like, I understand how this whole DAO structure is going to work. I understand what all this crypto stuff is, this auction, you know, blah, blah, blah. Why the hell are we focused on hair loss? And then you have all these people that are like, you know, I've memorized every single pathway and gene, and both sides of, you know, all of the literature on all of that stuff for hair loss. But like, why the hell are you, you know, trying to make a scam out of this and with crypto? And so I think it's a big part of our role in terms of just sort of like, honestly, uniting those two groups, because I think there's just, like I touched on, it's like if we could get some structure and some sort of incentive alignment from crypto with the current sort of online research community that's trying to tackle hair loss, because it is such a pressing issue that looks you in the mirror every day when you know, that's where it has leg up on longevity. It's like, you can see your hair loss in the mirror. And so, I think crypto offers a channel to really like harness sort of the online research going on and hopefully turn it into IP that brings new, you know, new treatments to market.
Definitely. I think, guys, we'd probably be like amiss not to highlight HairDAO's first funded research study. I believe it's a thyroid hormone study led by Dr. Ralph Paus. So firstly, how did this like come about? And secondly, what can you tell us about the study itself?
Yeah. So we've been talking to Ralph early on in the DAO's formation. Ralph's a very entrepreneurial guy. He also has his own private lab, private R&D lab and private wet lab outside of his work at the University of Miami. So he has his finger on the private sector. I think it also helps that he has a son who's like 23 years old and also like kind of has his finger on the private sector, including crypto. Ralph was always open to us. And then from there, really just had like, you know, almost an 8 month or 7 month dialogue with him that kind of led to it, to be honest. A lot of turns along the way. But I think at the end, like it was the study that made the most sense for, I mean, we can go into forever, but for like a wide variety of reasons, just namely because like it's the lowest hanging fruit in hair loss research today. And Ralph would tell you that. And our community figured that out, frankly, also. There were other investments that we looked at making in between from when we met Ralph and funded his study, and the community broke them down. Like, and these were investments that we joked like we would privately have made if we didn't have this group of 1,000 analysts looking over like every, you know, all the due diligence materials. So that's been really cool to see.
Did we ever touch on what the study was, or did we just jump in right there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd love some detail on the study as well.
All good. So we're effectively testing the effects of synthetic T3 and T4 thyroid hormone on human scalp skin samples. So like we talked about, sort of the more accurate research model to base hair loss findings on is actually, you know, scalp skin, human scalp skin. And this is the first time that we've tested or anybody has tested sort of the thyroid hormones topically, indicated for hair loss. Hopefully, I mean, we should have our first initial results by the summer, because it's already approved, at much higher dosages orally. And it's a very widely prescribed drug, for hypothyroidism. There is a road or a path where we could have a new treatment on the market, within a year. That would be really fast, but so, you know, maybe 2 years, which would be awesome. Because effectively, like the hair loss community, before we just come out with like a straight up cure for hair loss, needs sort of different medications to stack that target all of the different sort of pathways involved in hair loss.
Gotcha. To shift gears here for a second, guys, I think it'd be a good idea to sort of address some themes in Web3 and what really makes a project like HairDAO so unique. So for starters, like, why did you guys decide to build in Web3? Like, why does this structure make sense to sort of happen in a decentralized manner?
Yeah. So I think something that you touched on, I was gonna bring it back up. You said it's sort of like a niche area, hair loss, which I actually find funny, right? Because it's like it's almost niche in that we don't give it much attention. Honestly, there's a select group of power users who are deeply, deeply bothered by their hair loss. Then there's people who kind of come along it later in life and it sort of impacts them a little bit less. But ultimately, you know, like over 60% of the population deals with androgenic alopecia in some form, whether it's at a later age, whether it, you know, sort of results more just in thinning versus, you know, absolutely going bald. But along that point, right, like it should honestly be the end goal is to effectively like a product like toothpaste. Cheap cream, effective, you can rub on your head every day. You do it even if you're not necessarily losing your hair, because why not prevent it? And so ultimately, right, that's something that could be applicable to, like, you know, 3 billion, if not everybody, that just does it preventatively. And so ultimately, I think hair loss is a global problem. You know, it's not something that needs to be solved, like, in a neighborhood by you. And so whenever you have a global problem, sort of the best way to align a global work and sort of capital base is through crypto. I think there's just so many efficiencies. And if you were going to create like a global corporation through the BVIs, you'd be charged $40,000 just to set up the entity versus, you know, effectively a smart contract for less than a dollar. You know, and every time you want to sort of incentivize workers or give people credit for capital contribution, there's a token instead of, you know, the $200 that it would take to transfer ownership rights to somebody else. So I think it just really, like, in a super, super hyper efficient way, enables people to rally around a problem and solve it. And there's no reason to limit your capital contribution or your labor contribution to one geography anymore.
Totally. You know, something else that's like pretty unique here is the patient portal that you guys are working with. This idea, as I understand it, is that, you know, a patient is sort of compensated for handing over their genomic data. I think it's a VCF bioinformatics file, which we can touch on. And HairDAO runs federated learning models and not encrypted data. Is that right?
Yeah, we're not quite at the point where we're running models on it yet, but that will be the vision. That is the vision.
That's really cool. So how did this come about? What's the larger plan here?
Yeah. So we kind of view like pharma like through three, or at least drug development through three pillars. So you have the preclinical R&D, the clinical trials, and then the distribution of the drugs. And we think like we can hit all three of them with the patient portal. So with the preclinical R&D, what you do there is you essentially leverage big data to try to find new gene targets. So like we've already had requests from Ralph and other researchers, like one of Ralph's, for instance, was to look at strong family histories of balding and strong family histories of great hair, and looking at genes of both lineages and then doing a lot of analysis against each other. So that's kind of like the early treatment. In terms of the clinical trials, that's actually a lot easier. Like we can, like probably in our next version, we'll have a list of where all of our members are and where they're willing to participate in clinical trials. So instead of like this fragmented marketplace that exists today, we can, if you're running a hair clinical trial, you can come to us and we can give you the patients. And then on the distribution side, very similar to the early stage treatment side, by having all this data of what genes people have and what treatments they're taking and how they're working for them, we can better recommend treatments to the next patient if they give us their genome and any treatment history they may have. So really we view it as a way to target all three parts of drug development. It's still like, you know, just leaving beta, so haven't hit that vision yet, but hopefully sooner rather than later.
Totally. You know, keeping on the crypto-enabled topics here, HairDAO was recently the second ever BioDAO to mint an IP NFT. This might be like a good opportunity to take a couple steps back and, you know, sort of like we were doing at the beginning, assume no prior knowledge. But what does that mean, first of all, and why is this tech a big deal for tackling scientific funding and research, you know, in and outside of the domain of hair loss?
Right. Yeah, so the IP NFT was related to the thyroid hormone study that we were talking about earlier. And effectively, right, so like when we do that research study with Ralph, the DAO executes a joint development agreement, pretty much entitling the DAO and Ralph's lab to percentage ownership of sort of the intellectual property rights that could be generated from the data we collect on the human scalp skin. And so effectively what the IP NFT is, right, is just linking of that contract for those ownership rights of the study to an NFT on the blockchain. And I think, you know, ultimately what that does is just, it's just massive for productive output. When you think about where these contracts or these ownership rights would typically be held, right, like in the very opaque offices of tech transfer offices at universities, if you're a biotech entrepreneur, it's incredibly burdensome. To like dig through all these university databases to find some IP that you'd want to spin out and turn into your own biotech startup. With the IP NFT, right, it almost becomes like searching for biomedical IP is like buying some furniture on Wayfair. You know, it's really just simplified. It's all brought into one place. You save huge money on due diligence costs to establish that the person who says they own the IP actually owns the IP. So it just hugely decreases the friction of transacting in biomedical IP. And also the sort of, it just brings a lot of clarity to who owns what, where, you know, what exists, everything. Yeah.
Gotcha. And so, I mean, to start winding things down here, but having seen some like really great success so far building in this space, I'd be curious to hear what the experience of doing that in such, again, like a nascent space has been like for you guys. There's really no playbook for getting this done. Like across successes and challenges, what have been the biggest points of learning in building a BioDAO?
Yeah, I think the biggest learning, to be honest, is just how much more of DeSci is than just the IP NFT. Like, I think when we first found out about VitaDAO and got into it, the IP NFT was kind of like the big innovation to us, the 0-1 moment. But over time, like, because neither of us come from pharma, right? So like, it's been a big learning experience as we've built it. Learning about all the other middlemen that exist in the farm industry, and then also figuring out how DeSci can also remove them to further connect the researcher and the patient. So yeah, I think that's probably been the, at least for me, like what I've probably learned the most.
Yeah, and then outside of that, I would say, like, you know, because we are, you know, we're the second BioDAO ever to mint an IP NFT, right? So this is like super early days. And so I think the way we always talk about it is like, we're kind of building the pipes and trying to, you know, get the water to go through those pipes at the same time. And so I would sort of, the research and the ultimate study design is sort of the water. And then the pipes are effectively like all the structures that sort of point that productive energy, or like they channel it and point it in the same direction so we can actually get productive outcomes. And so I think there's a lot to be done in terms of infrastructure building in the space. But once that infrastructure is built out once, right, you can effectively take that system and apply it to any indication that suffers from the similar sort of industry dynamics as hair.
Gotcha. And, you know, I know it's still early days and everything, but if we're to take a couple steps back and sort of stretch our imaginations a little bit, like, what does this look like to you guys at scale? Like, once this has really been realized, if you look out a few years, like, what does success look like to you guys?
Well, I think if we can bring a new hair loss treatment to market, that would certainly be like a big hallmark indicator.
I think we want to effectively just disrupt, you know, TTOs, distributors, pay for access journals, everything in hair loss, and just facilitate the free exchange of ideas. And, you know, just make it hyper efficient for take the entire market and all of the profits and really make sure those profits are allocated, to maximum efficiency for the benefit of patients.
Gotcha. And, you know, as we start to wrap up here, why don't we, I guess, touch on some upcoming projects or initiatives for HairDAO? What in general is on the horizon that you think people should be paying particular attention to?
Yeah. So we're taking the portal out of beta, hopefully by next week. So whether you have hair loss or not, would love to have you contribute. Shortly thereafter, now that the hair token's live, we'll actually be partnering with Layer 2 and issuing hair when you contribute data in lifetime. So yeah, hopefully are what really creating like the first patient-owned database, we think, in DeSci. So that should be cool. Other than that, like a lot of governance proposals overlapping with that, because like we said, we just launched the token, which really is like a product in and of itself with all the work that comes with it. So laying a lot of the foundational infrastructure for the DAO now that it officially exists. Before it was kind of just a concept, and now it's real. So those are like the two biggest things, at least today, that I think we have. But I'm sure Verbs has other stuff too.
I mean, yeah, no, those are the two biggest things for sure. I would say the whole governance thing, that's a little bit of the pipes, right, that we were talking about. It's like, how do we set this whole thing up so that decisions ultimately are optimized for solving hair loss. And so, yeah, the governance proposals will be a big part coming forward. I'll say the last thing that I think is pretty cool, and this might be like talking, you know, a bit out of line because we still need to figure it out with Ralph, but I think just based on our first study and how that went with just sort of now that we've seen the process one time through, I think we actually have a bunch of ideas how we could run, for example, 10 studies in parallel, testing different compounds on human scalp skin, to just keep bringing down the cost of that research again. And I think particularly hair loss research could really benefit from economies of scale in that way. because the highest sort of cost of that research is the personnel, not necessarily the scalp skin. So does it matter if you're running sort of one study at once or 10 studies? So I think that's pretty exciting as well, as sort of a bit of like the water in this analogy that I keep using.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So to close this out here, I mean, as you mentioned, it seems like a niche topic, but it just happens to touch so many people. For anyone listening in who's interested, where can they get involved? Where can they find you guys?
The best place by far is our Discord. That's like the hub of our community. And then I'd say just hop in. You can tag me or Baxt. I'm at Averbs123. He's at Andy1 in the Discord. We're literally in there pretty much all day, every day. And then sort of the more of the external or like highlight communications, you can check out like our Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all that stuff. We're on it.
Just launching, actually, a lot of that. We were just Twitter and Discord, and now we're just expanding to on the channel. So we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
All right, check it out, people. Guys, that's all I got for you. This has been great. I appreciate the time and everything.
Thanks, awesome. Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like any information about this podcast and about Molecule, or if you're interested in going deeper into today's topics, feel free to visit Molecule's site, Twitter, or Discord. You can find all the important links in the description and show notes below. Also, if you are a researcher seeking funding, if you want to start working in a biotech DAO or get involved in any way, please visit Molecule's website at molecule.to for more information. Thank you again for listening, and see you soon. Thank you.